Joining us now, he is Jack Stern from BrewerFanatic.com. Joins us on the Fan Guest Hotline, powered by Gruber Law. Follow Jack on Twitter at @ByJackStern. Good afternoon, Mr. Stern. How are you? Oh, hold on a second. That's my fault. Go ahead, Jack.
Said I'm doing well. How are you guys?
I'm doing good. I tell you what, man. This dude here has got a voice for radio. If anybody ever made a voice for radio, it is Jack Stern's voice. He could do voiceover work, you know, like in the movies. We're talking about, you know, whatever the big scene is in a movie or whatever else. You need to get into that. Screw this baseball reporting stuff. Go big, big money and be the big voice guy in movies, Jack.
That might not be a bad idea because this baseball writing thing doesn't pay great. So maybe I need something to fall back on a little bit.
Yeah, I've heard that. I have heard that before. Okay, Jack Stern, you're one of my favorites, as you well know. So I have lots and lots of questions. Okay, first question. Your analysis on what you're hearing on Brandon Woodruff and what he looked like in this last AAA start, him coming back possibly this weekend, because I don't feel like as a fan base we should be expecting old Brandon Woodruff to appear here coming up next weekend for the Brewers. I feel like it's not going to necessarily be the same package right away.
It's not going to be close to the same package, and I don't mean that as a knock on him, but that's something that everybody's got to be aware of.
Yep.
I think as far as what the plan is, both the Brewers and Woodruff made it sound like they were hoping that this last rehab start could be it. He got up over 80 pitches. Once you kind of clear that mark on a rehab, the thought is you come back to the big leagues in that next outing, and then you can start pushing it a little bit further, closer to 100. So I think he's built out well enough to come back right now. Pat Murphy said yesterday that they're still in the process of deciding what exactly they're going to do that next turn through the rotation coming up next weekend. But from a stuff standpoint, he showed everything that I wanted to see. The fastball velocity is back into that like 92 to 95 range. Now, that's not where he used to sit. He used to be in like that 96 to 98 range.
Right.
But when you consider the kind of procedure that he came off of, I think just getting back to that 92 to 95 in and of itself is pretty remarkable progress. It's where he sat in spring training. It's where he sat early in his rehab assignments. Once he started experiencing some of these setbacks, then it dipped down to like that 88 to 90 range. I don't think he was going to be able to get guys up with that. I think in that way, the kind of pause on the rehab was a little bit of a blessing in disguise, which he said, too. It allowed him to kind of build some things back up in the weight room, clean some things up mechanically. But the things that are different, the velocity's down a little bit. But if he's sitting 92 and can touch 95 with not only the pitches that he already had, but I don't think this gets talked about a lot. He's added a bigger sweeping slider. He's added a cutter to his mix. He's now a six-pitch guy, and if you're sitting 92, touching 95 as a six-pitch guy, and you know how to mix those six pitches and you can hit your spots well enough, he's going to be able to get outs with this stuff. I feel pretty good about that. It's not going to be what it used to be, but I do think he can come back in this form, and if he's like a, say, like a high threes, maybe even a low fours ERA guy, but he can eat some innings in the back of that rotation if most of those starts are going to be quality starts or close to it, if he can give you, you know, five innings, two or three earned runs in a lot of these outings, I think that's going to help them. And I think that if that velocity is back to where it was in that last rehab start, I think he can do that. So it's not nearly the same package. People need to be prepared for that. But I think it's a package that can still be effective in the big leagues, which is a pretty big deal both for Brandon Woodruff and for the Brewers as well.
You know, the other part about this that everybody is talking about is, okay, when he comes back, everybody is under the assumption that means Chad Patrick is gone. We brought this up in the last segment, and that is Nestor Cortes is getting close to going on rehab as well. And when Cortes comes back, does that then mean Mizorowski is out? Do they go with one less hitter, go to a six-man rotation? That also would make sense.
Yeah, so I think as far as Mizorowski is concerned, it really seemed like the Brewers were holding off on a call-up for him because they didn't want him to be, you know, like a Logan Henderson type who's going up and down. I think they intended for him to be up here and then to stay up here. So I don't think he's going anywhere, especially if he continues throwing the ball well. Cortes, you are looking a little bit down the line. So this is something where maybe there could be some other injuries that pop up.
It's
in the
what,
meantime
mid to
that,
end of July, kind of probably, do you think, that for Cortes, mid to end of July?
I would say that's, the Brewers haven't given a definitive timeline, but just kind of putting the pieces together, I would say that's kind of the optimistic read right now. Yep. He's just starting a rehab assignment, and guys get about 30 days for those. So if he's starting that coming up here in a few days, that would put you on a timeline of about late July. And given how much time he's missed, I would guess he's probably going to go that maximum 30 days because he's got to build back out. But as far as Mizorowski goes, I would guess he stays up here. Six-man rotation, I think in the past that was something you could do, but now that you have the current roster limits where you're limited to 13 pitchers, I don't think the six-man rotation is really practical because that leaves you a man short in the bullpen, so I'd be surprised if they go that way. The ways that I'm kind of looking at this right now is, number one, somebody else could get hurt. Maybe Brandon Woodruff isn't super effective, and that creates some new problems. Another thing that I'm just kind of thinking, and this isn't anything that I know, it's not reporting, but just speculation on my part. If you're looking at the outlook of this rotation right now, I think out of all the guys who are pitching right now, I think Jose Quintana's looked about the shakiest, and he's a guy who's not owed a lot of money. He's on a one-year deal. Is he someone who the Brewers maybe try to sell at the deadline? I don't know, but if I'm just putting on my amateur GM hat, that's probably a guy who I'm looking at maybe considering moving on from at some point if you do have that logjam.
I always knew you were a smart guy. Charlie and I were talking about that last week. Charlie brought it up again today. Quintana definitely makes the most sense to get moved between now and the deadline. And the other part about this is Jack Stern of Brewer Fanatic joining us here on Wisconsin Sports Daily, served up by Wendy's. You look at that AAA rotation. My God, like, they're already full. And then you're going to have Gasser coming back at some point, too, on top of everything else. They need hitters. And Eugenio Suarez seems to make the most sense from a Brewers perspective to add some pop there at third base. I just have to think, if for no other reason, just to free up some of the logjam that they've got, that maybe it's Quintana and one of those guys at AAA, you know, that kind of go back in some type of deal if Arizona is still going to try and compete but still build for the future at the same point.
Yeah, it's tricky to think of kind of what a package would look like for a guy like Suarez. I agree. I think he's the best fit out of anybody on that who's going to be on that trade market this year, presumably. The tricky thing is always, well, he's a good fit for the Brewers, but he's also probably a good fit for like 10 other teams.
Not many other teams have the Brewers pitching depth that they have as far as being able to trade prospects. See, that's what everybody's got to realize here. If you start talking about a team that says, we want pitching, there's not many teams that are as deep as the Brewers right now between Major League and AAA right now that can offer as much as they can.
They are deep, but then you get to the question of, number one, so if we assume Quintana is someone who's on the way out, I would imagine that's not somebody the Diamondbacks are interested in a return if they're going to kind of retool a little bit. He's a one-year rental, and if they're trading Suarez, that would likely indicate that they're not intending to remain competitive this year. And then once you start dipping into some of those other prospects, then it's a question of, does Matt Arnold want to part with those guys for 1 year of Gino Suarez? And I'm not sure. And again, too, it's kind of a situation where, well, if they're not willing to offer one of those guys up, and I'm not sure they really should, but if they're not willing to offer one of those guys up, then there's almost certainly going to be another team that comes in with a better offer there.
He is Jack Stern, BrewerFanatic.com. Follow him on Twitter at @ByJackStern. Highly recommended. Always fun. Him, Kurt Hoag, Rosiak, McKelvey, Wagner, all do a great job covering the Milwaukee Brewers. Jack, I want to get your thoughts on Anthony Seigler, who, according to the report of, who was it that had that first? At least I saw Francis Romero. I saw him with it first. I don't know who else had it. So if anybody else had it before him, I apologize. But Seigler coming up possibly from Nashville. Brewers haven't made that official yet, so I'm assuming that'll happen tomorrow if it's going to happen. Why do you think he's coming up? What role do you think he fits? Amateur Brewer fan saw that yesterday and said, bye-bye, Monasterio. That's the end of your road. How do you view it?
Yeah, I think that's the obvious one right now. This is a guy who can fill multiple positions. He's caught for a lot of his career. He played a lot of second with the Yankees system. And then this year, the Brewers started giving him those reps at third base, especially when Caleb Durbin was struggling a few weeks ago. So I think right now, looking at it, I think the cleanest fit is you got the ability to move Mitchell to the 60-day IL, Garrett Mitchell, because he's undergoing shoulder surgery. That frees up your spot on the 40-man roster. You can option Monasterio. You can plug Anthony Seigler into that spot. The only potential holdup that I can think of in my mind is that if you option Monasterio right now and you're not comfortable with putting Bryce Terang at shortstop due to that shoulder injury that cropped up in spring training when he tried to play there, that would leave you without a backup shortstop behind Joey Ortiz. But at the same time, Joey Ortiz has been swinging a much better bat lately, so maybe they are comfortable with it. But if you're looking at the actual role of can bounce around between third, second, maybe even gets a start behind the plate once in a while if they need someone to spell William Contreras, I think Seigler's a better fit right now. And he's also a left-handed bat, too, so you can pair him and Durbin at third base if you really want to. If there's a tough right-handed matchup that you don't want Durbin to see, Seigler can come in and start that day. But this is a guy who had the former top prospect pedigree. He was a former first rounder pick by the Yankees. Not someone who really progressed a whole lot in their system, but he had a decent year in Double A last year. He's really come on strong in Nashville for the Brewers now. Not a guy who has a ton of power, but he is hitting the ball much harder than he had at any point in his career. This is a really talented guy, and I mean, he's so talented that this is a guy who back before he became a professional, not only was a switch hitter, he was a switch pitcher too. He can throw with both hands. So this is a guy who's got a lot of talent, and I think if he's coming up, I think you're going to see the athleticism pretty quickly. Maybe not the most exciting player in the world, but this is a guy who I think is going to be able to get on base. There's some gap power there. He's got the defensive ability to fill in at multiple spots. I wanted him up with the Brewers quite a while ago, so I'm happy to see that he's coming up to fill whatever kind of role it is. My guess is he's going to bounce around a little bit, maybe get some starts at third base. But this is a guy who he's going to help them out, I think, once he's up here. Maybe not a crazy exciting player, but you know, if you can get league average offense, solid defense at multiple spots, you absolutely take that in a bench role, and it's an upgrade over what Monasterio's done so far, if that's the move.
I forgot where I read this. Maybe it was MLBTradeRumors.com, because I live on that site, so it might have been there, but I don't remember exactly where I read it. But I guess I didn't go back and look at his minor league positions of where he played and so forth. I didn't realize Isaac Collins was an infielder. Like, he played second base, he played some third base. I mean, that is a guy that has done really well. I don't think anybody saw Isaac Collins being some type of crucial piece necessarily to this Brewers team, but he has done really well. You're going to have Blake Perkins that's maybe getting closer on rehab as well. So that might be another option for them at some point down the line. Maybe not this year, but in the future, if they like Isaac Collins bat and think he can hit, that maybe he goes somewhere until this group coming up from single A and double A are ready to play.
Yeah, I think if you're talking about like the past infield experience there, he has played the infield, but he's a really good defensive outfielder. I think he's a lot better out on the grass than he was in the infield. He hasn't really played a lot of infield in the big leagues now. He's more or less become a full-time left fielder, and I think that's fine just because of how good the jumps have been out there. But from the offensive standpoint, I do think he's hitting a little bit over his skis right now. It's probably going to come back down to earth a little bit. But I think he's another guy, he just kind of falls into that mold, like not an exciting player, but there's a, what would you call it? I would say like kind of a skill set of competency there almost. Like, he's not going to be a terrible player. Like, he's got good plate discipline. He puts up a quality at bat. Maybe it's not the highest ceiling in the world, but you throw him in there, you can put him on a roster, and you know that usually at the very worst, he's a very quality bench piece. He's very close to average offensively. Plays good defense wherever you want to put him. And I think there's value in those types. And the Brewers have stockpiled those types over recent years. And I think that's the reason why it seems like almost every year they have one of those guys who ends up playing really well for them. You know, they identify these guys. I mean, Isaac Collins, this is a guy who the Rockies let slip through their fingers. But the Brewers, good on them for being able to identify the skill set there and knowing that he was someone who could maybe progress through their system and help them a little bit. But yeah, I mean, it's a big part of why the Brewers have been competitive year in and year out, is they make sure they have enough of these guys who are just okay. And then if one of those guys gets hot for a little bit, then he's more than okay. And I think that's what you're seeing with Isaac Collins right now.
I got one last one for you, Jack Stern of Brewer Fanatic. Quinn Priester, what has been the biggest change from when they got him to where now he is today?
I think the biggest one is more than anything, just the command. I mean, you look at kind of how those first couple outings started for him. The biggest issue by far wasn't that he was getting hit super hard. It was always that he was walking a lot of guys.
Yep. And,
you know, this is how baseball works. If you're coming into a situation and you can give up a couple of hits in an inning and you're going to be okay. If you've walked one or two guys in that inning and then you give up a couple of hits, all of a sudden that line looks a lot worse. So they moved him over on the rubber a little bit. He's gone from pitching on the extreme first base side of the rubber to now starting a lot closer to the middle of the mound, and that's really helped him lock in the control a little more. I talked to him and Chris Hook a couple weeks ago for a story I did on him, and really the big changes that they had made at the time were that positioning, and then they really just had him going heavy on his heavy sinker and then throwing that slider off of that, and really the approach then was, hey, let's just throw your best pitches over the plate and watch guys pound it into the ground, and let's watch this defense go to work. So that's what he was doing for quite a while, probably about a stretch of like seven.
See, this is that YouTube thing here, see? When we're live streaming on YouTube, then Wi-Fi can screw with everything. You can have it with a cell phone. Same type of deal, right? He literally just froze on our screen. He literally just froze. Look at him. He's frozen on our YouTube screen right now. Oh, that's all right. We'll try and get with Jack Stern another time.